The reading is from Exodus chapter 16, verses 1 to 15. Manna and quail. The whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat round pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." Then the Lord said to Moses, "I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days." So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, "In the evening you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, and in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble against us?" Moses also said, "You will know that it was the Lord when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread you want in the morning, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we? You are not grumbling against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses told Aaron, "Say to the entire Israelite community, come before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling." While Aaron was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked towards the desert, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing in the cloud. The Lord said to Moses, "I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them, at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God." That evening quail came and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, "What is this?" For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread the Lord has given you to eat."
Amen. Well, we are working through this journey this term. The Exodus journey in the Bible is a journey of a mass of people, a people forming one whole race, a people forming a nation. And the reason we are looking at these episodes on the journey is because through the journey, the people grew in character. People grew in their understanding of God. And so the journey shaped them as a collective people, about 1 million people, we would estimate. And God is collectively sculpturing them, if you like, to be his people of faith and trust, to be his witness to the world. And that's why it's important for us to look at these key lessons and say, well, look, if God shaped them like that, maybe he might want to do similar with us as a people. And in this story, it's about basic provision, your needs day by day. And it's no accident, I think, that these pair of chapters, 16 and 17, 16 about food, 17 about water, no accident that they come early in the journey, because it's a basic lesson, an elementary lesson of trust, and therefore a good one to have near the start of the process as they journey and learn to trust God. As we are talking basic provision of food and water. Now we know, don't we, as human beings, we need oxygen. Remove oxygen, we'll die pretty quick. We need water. Remove water and we will die quite quickly. And we need food. Remove food. Well, it'll take a little while. Some of us have reserves. But eventually we will die. These are basic provisions of food and water. That's why the food bank with the general public, I think, resonates with people, because as humans, we all understand that we basically need food. And so the response from the public is marvellous as well for the food bank. But when we learn to trust, it's how is God calling you to trust? And that's our question for this week. If we can put up on the slide every now and again, we introduce these questions just to prod and poke ourselves about our faith in God. And for us individually, but also collectively, where is God calling you to trust? Where is God calling us to trust as a people here? Good to return to that question from time to time again. Where is God requiring you to have a basic trust in him? Now, when it comes to basic provisions, most of us just take loads of stuff for granted. We can turn on the tap and out comes water. We can go to any number of supermarkets, convenience stores, and buy abundant foods at the moment in the UK relatively cheaply. So we take stuff for granted compared to the majority world, where it's not so easy to take for granted. Even the poorest among us, even the people who do need to use the food bank on a global scale, are still in the top 10% of the richest people on the planet. So when you're struggling a bit at the end of a month, you're still a king or queen, you're still royalty compared to most of the rest of the human population. But where are you called to trust? So in the Exodus story, we have this mass of people trekking across the desert, and surprise, surprise, their food supplies, their packed lunches run out. A million people need food. That's a lot of food. That's going to be a big barbecue. That's going to take our big Sainsbury's to supply that. And it's a legitimate need. Of course they need food, just as in chapter 7. Of course they need water. The two chapters, I think, go together as parallel stories. So homework, go home, read 16 and read 17. Read them in parallel. But the collective voice of the people, as we see in verse 3 of chapter 16, is troubling. The collective voice of the people is that they get a bit hungry and they grumble. They grumble against God. Why has God brought us here? Has he brought us here to starve? Now, it's against God, and Moses could see that. That's a good thing. Moses does well in chapter 16. He could see that the grumbling is against God rather than against him. I'll tell you, and I can say this from first-hand experience, when people are grumbling, as a leader, it's hard not to take it personally. In chapter 16, Moses doesn't take it personally. They see that the grumble is against God. In chapter 17, the parallel passage, Moses doesn't do so well. And he goes to God and says, "Oh, these people, they want to kill me. It's terrible." He's taking it personally as a leader. That's a natural human emotional response. But the grumble is against God. And look at their words. "If only we had died back in Egypt." In Egypt, we had pots of meat and salads and all kinds of stuff. And now we've come here, we would have been better off back there. You know, were they kidding? Remember, what was the status of this millionfold people back in Egypt? They were slaves. They were oppressed. They were forced to do hard labor. And now they're saying, "Oh, well, We were better off when we were back then as slaves, as forced labour. Really? Really? Can they really say that? You know the grass is always greener syndrome. And even when you move to a new place, because the grass is always greener back where you came from, even though it's worse, you think, well, the grass was greener back there. Well, this is that kind of grass is greener syndrome on steroids. It's like, they were slaves in forced labour. How can they say back then was better when now they're with the presence of God leading them forward in his purposes? Now, just before you think, oh, well, they're terrible Israelites in this Bible story. They really just didn't get it. And, our faith is much better than that. Just pinch yourself. Just pinch yourself. Really? How many of us have come across difficult situations or situations of need and have played in our minds, God doesn't really care for me. God is not interested in this. God's leaving me to suffer or to go without or whatever. How many times have we played that in our minds, or even if we haven't spoken it out verbally? That's what we've been thinking. That, oh God, why have you led me here? This is awful. You, basically, what you're saying in your mind, what the Israelites were saying, is that now I think you're a phony God. A phony God. You don't look after people. You lead them to these places, leave them to starve, and this is me now. You're writing God off in your head. How many of us have done that? Let's be honest with ourselves now. I think I've done that. We've probably all done that at some point in our lives. But despite their grumbling, God has a gracious answer. Verse 4 and 5, basically, in a nutshell, I will provide. It's going to be miraculous. The meat is literally going to drop from the sky in the form of these birds crash landing. And in the morning, breads will appear. It's going to be miraculous, but it will be there. The whole million population will be fed. Interesting side note here. Note the precise instructions for collecting the bread. You can collect each day just what you need. The important point that. Just what you need. Don't collect too much. Don't stockpile. Just collect what you need for that day. Now, special provision, at the end of a week, we have a rest day. Don't want you going out working, collecting food on that day. So on the sixth day, the day before, you can collect double, and there's special preservation arrangements for it to feed you on rest day, day seven. Very precise instructions. Simple, beautifully simple. Collect what you need. It'll be great. Day six, you can collect double so that you can rest and eat day seven. Did everyone follow these simple instructions? Read the whole chapter yourself, you'll find out. No, of course they didn't. Some people stockpiled. Other people went out and thought, I'm going to collect on day seven anyway, this is good stuff. And what happened? God was really clever. He arranged that anyone who stockpiled, the next morning their stockpile had turned to rot with maggots in. So it was useless. So they had to learn to just collect just what you need day on day. And those people went out on day seven. Guess what? They found nothing. Duh. Because God said, collect double the day before. Beautifully simple instructions, a simple trust in God. And they got into the habit of doing that. And that routine was going to last 40 years. But then chapter 17, so I don't know how long it is from chapter 16, but they've gone into this routine, God's providing, God's feeding, but now water's running low. And what do? They grumble. Have they learned anything? Doesn't look like it. They're grumbling all over again, back to square one. Have they not learned this lesson that God will provide just what they need day on day? Well, again, before you think, oh, terrible Israelites, we would never do that. We get these things sorted out. Pinch yourself again. How many times have you been in a situation prayed, had other people pray with you, seen God provide, seen God move things forward and move you forward to greater things. But then, 1 week later, or maybe a month later, or maybe a year later, or 10 years later, sometime down the road, you face another situation, maybe not quite the same as the one before, but another situation, a bit of a bind, and you worry, and you forget the last time God provided. And you go through all this angst again. How many of us have done, how many of us have hit that second situation and flipped out, thinking, oh my goodness, how's this going to work? Well, I've done that. I'm sure we've all been there.
Carl, it's much easier to grumble than to trust.
Exactly. There you go. John summed it up for me. Right, I can sit down now. I'm done. So that's a good point to go back to our key question. Where is God calling you to trust? This is like a prophetic intervention here. Because next slide, the challenge is put the trust into practice and stop the worries me kind of thinking. In other words, stop the grumbling. Thank you, John. I'll pay you later. It's awesome. Right? Because it is a challenge for us, isn't it? To not grumble, but think, oh, actually, I can learn and see God provide. I can trust God here. So I don't need to go through all this worries me thinking kind of stuff that I've been through so many times in the past. I don't need to do that because I can learn to trust God. It's not saying we live in denial of legitimate needs. There are legitimate needs and they cause legitimate anxieties. But it's what we do in that circumstance that matters. Are we going to allow our mind to play out this scenario of doom and write God off as a phony, or are we going to trust God? It's our attitude and therefore the way we live. That's the most important thing to take from today. It's what we do in the circumstance, what is our attitude, and therefore how we live when we have these scenarios, legitimate scenarios of needs. And that's really crucial for us as a people going forward, because we've got a big thing about leading people in following Jesus in what we call discipleship. And trying to encourage people so that one-to-one, someone experienced in discipleship can help a newcomer to faith. Now, if you're going to do that one-to-one, I think that maybe there's three challenges for you to think about and take on board. If you're going to do one-to-one helping someone new to the faith, do you have the confidence that you can lead them and tell them about the basics of faith? Do you have that basic confidence? Well, the good news is that we've got tools and resources to help that. And right now we're writing a one-to-one discipleship course of 7 sessions for you to sit down with someone over 7 different occasions and take them through the basics of faith to kind of give you those kind of resources so you have the confidence to do that. So that base hopefully will be covered. But here's the sting. When you're working with someone one-to-one, it's not simply downloading information. The newcomer will be looking at how you live your faith. So if in the sessions you're talking about trusting God and having this simple trust in God, they will be looking at your life to see how you trust in God. In other words, you have got to live this stuff, not just download the material from the nice course we have given you. That is probably a bit more scary, I suggest. But I think it's the third aspect that is probably going to be I'm not sure what word to use, but the most tricky, in that if you're going to work one-to-one with someone, that means you have to invest your time in their life. So you just do the 7 sessions. You're going to sit with someone each session, maybe 45 minutes to an hour. You probably want to spend half an hour preparing, ready for that session. It'll take you a quarter of an hour to get to meet to the person, quarter of an hour to get home. So each session, is taking 2 hours of your time. If I said to you after the service, do you know, I've met this person and they gave their life to Jesus on the spot, in the marketplace. The Spirit of God was moving and they were there and they gave their life and they want to grow, they want to follow Jesus, they want to move forward. Would you work with them between now and, say, February half term? 7 sessions, there's one every 2 weeks, a little bit of gap over Christmas. But to do that, you're going to have to invest 14 hours of your time between now and February half term. Would you be up for that challenge? Some of you might find that difficult. 14 hours doesn't sound much, but I know what kind of crowded lives we all lead. But that's the challenge of us investing our lives, living our faith, working one-to-one. But that's on an individual basis. Corporately, we need to learn to trust God for the needs we have, for the ministry and the mission that we feel God is calling us to together. And with the leadership team, we've landed on this word capacity. And seeking God for greater capacity for mission and ministry. Now, capacity is not simply about doing more. It includes that. It also includes depth. It also includes going out new areas, pioneering new things, just as we've helped start the food bank and CAP. But greater capacity. Now, here's the deal. A church always needs people to do things. Look at the back of a news sheet. In the bottom corner, there's always a little box saying, we need people to do this, we need people to do that, and so on. It always needs people to do stuff. But collectively, what are we going to do in the face of those needs? Are we going to adopt an attitude of not grumbling, but instead trusting in God for the right resources for the things he's calling us to do, for the basic provision? You see, that the bottom line is that a church, to do its mission and ministry, needs given lives. People with passion and willingness to serve and get stuck in and do stuff, to give their time. Given lives, given to the work that we feel called to do. So earlier I said a human body needs oxygen, needs food, needs water. Well, a church, go with this analogy for a moment. A church, we need the Spirit of God among us. That's the oxygen. But just as a human body also needs food and water, a church needs given lives, people willing to serve and take part in these different roles for the mission and ministry. Now, one caveat to that illustration, there is a problem with it, in that, of course, we consume food. We don't want, as a church, to consume people. We don't want people to serve and get burnt out so that eventually they are pooped out by the church. We don't want to do that, which is why we talk about finding the right rhythms and diet and balance of stuff. Why, when we pray into the gaps, in the rotas and the things that we would like people to do or need people to do, we always do it with an open mind. We always do it open to the possibility that Jesus may actually be saying to us, you don't need to do that anymore. Or you can do it in a different way, rather than just the way that the rota says or the gap has been filled in the past. And that's about working into our collective calling as a church. So as a church, we're praying for capacity, but we want those to be God's ideas, not simply good ideas and grand schemes. And that's a careful journey of prayer. But to wrap all this up, together and to conclude, I want to take you back to verses 6 and 7, where Aaron and Moses say something very interesting to the people about God's provision. They say, in the evening, you will know that it was God who brought you out of Egypt. In the evening, you will know. In the morning, you will see the glory of God. Evening, no. Morning, you will see. Well, on one level, that could simply be in the evening, the quail's going to land, that gives you meat, and in the morning, the bread's going to magically, or supernaturally, God's making it appear. That'll be the glory of God making this bread appear. That's one level. On another level, see in verse 10, the people literally saw the glory of God in the clouds as they were standing in the desert. But I think maybe there's another level. Go back with me to the creation story in Genesis 1, that bit where God made all the different stuff. And you'll see that it was originally written poetically, and it has a little refrain, a little chorus, for each period or each day. How does it go? There was evening, there was morning, the first day, the second day, the third day. This little refrain, it repeats through Genesis 1. There was evening, there was morning, the next day. What do we do? Well, most of us, evening time. Sun goes down, we watch some telly or whatever. We go to bed and sleep in the evening. We rest. We have to leave the next few hours as we go subconscious to God to get on with it, yeah? That's what we do, most of us. I know there's a few people here. I'm looking at one who stays up till midnight. But most of us, we go to sleep and allow God to do stuff. That's the evening. It's then the morning we wake up and we discover that God's got all this great stuff for us, the glory of the Lord. So maybe that's saying, maybe we need to learn to rest content in God's provision, knowing that He has glorious things ahead of us in the morning. In the evening, you will know, rest content in God's provision. For in the morning, God's got great things, you will see His glory. Rest content, ahead will be His glory. Let's pray.